I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about WarmFest, the three-day festival in Broad Ripple Park that celebrates the White River art, recreation, and music. We're going to talk about what the festival is about, who will be performing, and how you can attend. My guests will be promoter Dan Ripley, Jack Shepler, the CEO of AOK and promoter of festivals including WarmFest, Broad Ripple Music Festival and Circle City Inn Pride, and Jeb Banner, CEO of Smallbox and founder of Musical Family Tree. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI, and Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about WarmFest, the White River Arts, Recreation, and Music Festival, four-day event in Broad Ripple Park that's coming up over the Labor Day weekend. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or find us on Twitter at WFYI. Well, my guests are Jack Shepler, who's the CEO of AOK and promoter of festivals, including WarmFest, Broad Ripple Music Fest, and Circle City Inn Pride, Jeb Banner, CEO of Smallbox and founder of Musical Family Tree, and Dan Shipley, promoter. Yours is low-key. Welcome to all of you. Dan's the one who's got the small title, I guess, right? The short one, the brevity.
My name's Ripley.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ripley, I'm sorry. Yeah. Dan Ripley.
Thanks, John.
I've mistaken it then here on the sheet. I apologize for that.
No problem.
So, real quickly then, Dan Ripley, why don't you talk to me a little bit about the genesis of WarmFest.
Thanks, John. In a roundabout way, WarmFest came together with a defined purpose to cultivate stewardship, which is one of the things that Jeb Banner instructed me through and mentored me with in my business. At the time of defining that purpose to cultivate stewardship, I was promoting a vintage marketplace and working with art and antiques auction business, and had a history of as a nightclub promoter. And all of that tied with a passion for the White River here in Indianapolis all seemed related in terms of sustainability and stewardship. And with that, defined a mission to promote environmental responsibility, independent business and artisans, and this year added community health and wellness to that. All of that seems odd to people when we're talking about a music festival, but along with some inspiration from my historical mentor, Carl G. Fisher, which I hope we get a chance to talk about today, I determined that the best way to cultivate stewardship was to raise awareness of the issues and, most importantly, the White River, not just in Indianapolis, but specifically in Broad Ripple, which led me to the discovery of the tremendous history of Broad Ripple Park and when it was once a large amusement park, and the Broad Ripple Pool of the White River, which was once a resort area and a vacation area here in Indianapolis, and the belief that raising awareness, bringing people back to the river, demonstrating the best uses of our parks in terms of family programming and entertainment was a great way to achieve my purpose of cultivating stewardship.
And Jeb, how did WarmFest come together? I mean, what were the pieces? We now know that its focus is really on celebrating kind of the culture and the legacy associated with White River. But how did we decide on a music festival, and, you know, what themes did we, how did you decide on the themes you wanted to stress?
Well, I think Dan really carried that vision. I think what we saw happen last year and again this year is a lot of people in the community deciding this had to happen, something we need. It's a missing ingredient in this city. We have a lot of great things going. We've got the cultural trail that just launched, you know, mm-hmm. after years of investment. We've got a lot of things happening on the business side in terms of marketing technology and other industries that are growing, and we're becoming an attractive place for young professionals, and the economy here is getting stronger, and I think there's more opportunities. We're missing some things. A music festival, I think, is a really important ingredient to have a full cultural landscape, you know, full ecosystem. If you look at a lot of other cities that we quote-unquote compete with, whether they're Louisville or Cincinnati or mm-hmm. really anywhere, that's something they have, and they have something they have, if you look at Forecastle, for instance, something that was started back in 06 or so, has become this mm-hmm. really important music festival, drives a lot of economy down there around the event. So when it came to programming, our thinking was, how can we build something that really serves the local community, obviously speaks to the purpose of stewardship, brings people back to the river? And so the different take on it for us is, this is not just about a music fest. It's about really a community experience of riverboat cruises and kids' activities and arts and antiques shopping. And it's very Indiana. It's very Indianapolis. It has to have
Hoosier our centric.
Yeah, it has to have our DNA on it. It can't just be another music fest. We need to make it specific to who we are. And that's where the Carl Fisher story comes in. And this the way that he built the Speedway and Lincoln Highway and Miami Beach, you know, he did it all, just he bootstrapped it. And that's what mm-hmm. we've done, is we've just kind of bootstrapped everything. And it's been challenging, but it's been exciting to see the community come around this event and gain momentum.
Okay, we've talked about the motivation and sort of how the pieces came together. Jack, I think they've set you up to talk about what WarmFest is, who's going to be there, why people should come.
Well, WarmFest is obviously first a music festival to a lot of people. We have a huge lineup, including of Montreal, Big Head Todd and the Monsters, Chris Robinson Brotherhood. He was the lead singer of the Black Crowes, Guided by Voices, Mute Math, just a whole ton of great bands from that cover different generations too. Saturday we have a lot of indie rock and a ton of local bands. On Sunday we have a lot of more heritage and classic rock style bands. But besides that, we have again the marketplace and the recreational activities like yoga, as well as the riverboat cruises, which are pretty awesome. It's an extra ticket, but you get to spend an hour on the river with live music. On a double decker paddle boat. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
Where do you get the double decker paddle boat?
It's a company called Broad Ripple Boat Company.
Okay.
It's the only one on the White River that you can rent.
Because that was one of the, has always been at least one of the sort of urban folk myths, is the White River really wasn't navigable. Dan, you're shaking your head there, nodding your head up and down. You want to knock that one down? Or?
Sure. Well, so I mentioned the Broad Ripple Pool. Broad Ripple Pool is a four-mile stretch of the river that's where the water level is controlled by the Broad Ripple Dam, which was built in 1830. So that has a consistent minimum depth, which allows for a lot of boating activity. There's power boats and water skiers and wakeboarders and a 60-passenger double-decker paddle wheel. Historically, there were multiple paddle wheels and river boats that used to, when the area was a resort area, that used to navigate those waters. So there is a four-mile stretch that's basically a reservoir that mm-hmm. Is fully navigable. Navigable actually means that that you're allowed to pass through, that residents along the river can't impede passage through mm-hmm. the river. So under certain conditions, we actually travel a 22-mile stretch from Broad Ripple all the way up past Noblesville.
We are talking about Warm Fest here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by giving us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or tumble upon us on Twitter at WFYI. Well, I should say, you know, if people want to do this, and it sounds like, I mean, I know from looking at your website that the Jack just listed only a handful of the groups mm-hmm. that you've got coming. It's 4 days of events, right?
We have over 60 acts.
Over 60 acts. Where do people go if they want to find out information, find a schedule of events, if they want to buy tickets? And I should ask, what is the cost?
To
attend if you want to do it. Is there a cost?
There is a cost, yeah. We have weekend tickets that are currently $70. That actually goes up tomorrow at midnight.
Okay, so they should move quickly if they're going to do this.
Right.
All 4 days.
Yeah, for all 4 days. And we do also have single-day tickets available. Currently, Saturday and Sunday are $30, and Friday and Monday are $10. And they can buy tickets at warmfest.org.
And it's over the Labor Day weekend, right? So mm-hmm. it starts on the 28th,
the 29th.
Friday the 29th, yep. 30th. Okay.
Yep, through September 1st.
Okay. And then in terms of where they would go to find where they buy the tickets and the schedule events, which groups they might want to see or what things they might want to do, do you have a website?
Yeah, warmfest.org.
Okay, warmfest.org, yep. And they can buy online. Well, we are talking about Warm Fest here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so at 866-476-3881. Well, Dan, I know you'd mentioned that you wanted to talk a little bit about Carl G. Fisher. I thought I'm not going to leave that balloon hanging out there for the audience any longer. So please share your stories.
Quickly. Well, Jeb mentioned some of the developments that he gets credit for, and most notably around here, he's noted for being one of the four founders of the Motor Speedway. He was also, I believe, owned the first automobile dealership and was a bicycle dealer and built bike racing tracks and was as a young man left, was a school dropout from Greenfield, Indiana. He also envisioned the first transcontinental highway, which was the Lincoln Highway, and then worked to bring communities together to fund that, and traveled the whole distance himself in a motor car. Later on, the North-South Highway, the Dixie Highway, he was responsible for. And at some point, he went to Miami and dredged out Biscayne Bay and built Miami Beach, plotted out the whole town and built a bridge developed it. And he developed it with he enticed people to enjoy their life and to find recreational areas and especially natural resources. And that's part of the inspiration. I believe that he had visions for White River while he was here. He built his home on what's now the Marion University campus and overlooked the river himself and proposed a boating regatta course on White River. He left that for his other endeavors, and he left that to us to develop now, 100 years later, nearly.
What created your sense of connection with him?
I had a personal experience that's as a rumor that I grew up on Lake Tippecanoe, and we had this big boathouse at our property that was completely out of scale for the rest of the lake. And it was a rumor that that was a Carl Fisher built boathouse for one of his regatta boats. And I read his biographies and just somehow developed this almost spiritual connection to him.
And how did you find out? I mean, obviously, you're probably more well-versed on his life than he was, since he had to live it and walk through the confusion that life brings. I mean, how did you come to learn as much about him as you did?
I just became a sponge for any information I could find about him. There are three biographies, there are his a relative of his, Jerry Fisher, wrote the most recent one, who is now also writing a sequel or an additional version of that biography. And I've met him and studied through the Indiana landmarks and just studied online and had many conversations about him.
We are talking about Wormfest here on No Limits. And if you'd like a preview of Wormfest, we're going to have one on 90.1 on August 27th at 7 p.m. here on WFYI. My guests are Dan Ripley, Jack Shepler, and Jeb Banner. I am John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits, where we are talking about Wormfest, the four-day music and arts festival in Broad Ripple Park. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about Wormfest, the four-day festival in Broad Ripple Park that celebrates the White River and its legacy of art, recreation, and music. My guests are promoter Dan Ripley, Jack Shepler, the CEO of AOK and promoter of festivals including Wormfest, Broad Ripple Music Festival, and Circle City in Pride, and Jeb Banner, CEO of Smallbox and founder of Musical Family Tree. We've gotten a tweet from a listener, and if you would like to join the conversation via Twitter, you can do so by finding us at WFYI. This is from Nora. Says, can you please tell us more about Community Day? So who wants to take that one? Who wants? You're all looking at each other. I need one of you to look
that.
At me. All right, Dan.
Monday.
Okay.
Monday we envisioned as a community day. Obviously, with the reduced admission price, that is a featured day for Indie Arts and Vintage Marketplace. We're also doing a food drive with Second Helpings on that day, a pasta drive that will be collected at the gate. That's a day that will have a bigger focus on our health and wellness initiatives with fitness and yoga events. Again, the Indie Arts and Vintage Marketplace will be mostly set up that day as well. We do have bands playing and DJs all through the day for music entertainment. High Rider and Twin Cats play later in the day, and we have boat cruises with entertainers all day that day too.
I think the idea is this year to kind of like put it out there and say to the community, hey, what would you guys like to do on this Monday? You know, it's the day before going back to school. We decide not to do the full festival programming because, you know, people are kind of looking to have an early night. But it's often a really great day to come out to the park, experience the river, and maybe do a little antique shopping. But we want to have this evolve year after year into something where we collaborate further with different groups in the community who can use it as, think of it as a canvas to paint on. We really want, part of this is we want people to rediscover Broad Ripple Park. One of the real joys of Wormfest last year was spending 3 days on that campus and just walking around and just feeling like I was at home, you know, in a space that I drive by all the time. And my kids loved it. We had such a great time. And it's just, you know, it's such a family-friendly experience, and we think if we can make it cheap, let's go ahead and do it on Monday.
And that answers a question we got from a listener who didn't want to go on the air, said, is Wormfest an all-ages event? I think you probably, if you're bringing your kids, most likely it is.
10 and under are free. So
10 and under are free. Yeah. So in terms of this, I want to ask, you know, we've talked an awful lot about sort of reminding people of the legacy of the White River. And why that is so important, why that's one of the, you know, the reasons for doing this, and one of the things that makes this festival distinctive. Why do you think? Why do you think Indianapolis, to some degree, ignores that part of its history or legacy, or does not pay sufficient attention to it? Dan, you're the one looking pensive, so I'm going to throw the question to you.
And well, I think it's obviously an issue with pollution of the river. there was a time when the river was in much worse condition than it is today, and there are many important groups that are that have worked on towards the stewardship and the cleaning of the river. Most importantly, Friends of the White River and the White River Watershed Alliance. So with that, there has, talk about awareness, the guide fish kill so many years ago, 12 or 15 years ago, that raised incredible awareness, and many, many people came together, and the river has become much cleaner since then. Currently, with the Deep Rock Tunnel being built, which will divert the city sewer over combined sewer overflows from the river, the rest of the river will be much cleaner in 9 or 10 years than it is today. And I say the rest of the river because it's my belief from what I've seen that none of the city of Indianapolis combined sewer overflows flow into the White River above the Broad Ripple Dam. Mm-hmm. The significance being is the Broad Ripple Dam was created to create the canal. Mm-hmm. The dam diverts the water from the river into the canal. And so the city had the foresight not to pollute its own water supply, which might raise some issues that were recently exposed about Carmel, if anybody wants to call in and talk about that. But I think that that most importantly, the cleaning of the river is why it, in the history of the pollution of the river, is why people were ignoring it. It had a stigma about it.
Yeah, but I guess I was born in Cleveland and lived there during the years when the river caught fire.
Right.
So, and yet it didn't seem to separate itself. Now, admittedly, the river kind of bisects the city, so it's hard not to make it part of the city landscape in Cleveland. I got to believe that at some level it is a little more than just the pollution or that the concern about that, because obviously not just the river but the lake was pretty polluted in Cleveland. Jeb, do you have thoughts?
I find it amazing that so many people that work and live in Broad Ripple don't even know the river goes through it.
Yeah.
I tell people, the White River goes, but it's been blocked off. There's been brush that's grown up. What's that stuff called?
Honeysuckle.
Honeysuckle. Yeah. Terrible, terrible invasive species. But even the bridges block the view. You can't see the Broad Ripple Dam, which is a beautiful dam. You can't see it from almost any angle. And it's almost like the city has gone out of its way to obscure the river. And there are a core of people that cherish it, and Dan's one of them. And I think that a lot of this passion for warm is driven by those people. They see this as a place to build community. There's something really powerful about bodies of water. Mm-hmm. And we don't have a lot of, it's unfortunate, we're in the middle of Indiana in the sense of, like, we don't have a lot of mountains and lakes, but we have a river, and we have a pretty good one. And I think that there was just maybe it's just neglect. I can't say we know the why behind it, but certainly neglect. And now it's time to, as the row does, reconnect our waterways, as WARM is doing, raising wide awareness. They went and cleared the honeysuckle last year before WARMFest. Now people are like, wait, there's a river going through Broad Ripple Park?
Oh, there's water.
There's water here. It's like, and
it's amazing.
And you can swim in it and you can boat in it. And that's been a big wake-up call. And that I think, you can't underestimate the value it brings to the city to have that river reconnected to its heart.
Well, and I don't want to belabor the point, but it's one of those things because, as Dan has pointed out, it clearly was a vital part. It was a resort community, and then it went from that to almost obscurity. And it's always interesting to me when things like that happen. We've gotten a couple of questions from listeners who did not want to go on the air, callers. And if you'd like to join the conversation by calling us, you can do so at 866-476-3881. One of them says, how can people help with WARMFest? Jack, I'll throw that one to you.
Well, we do have volunteers. They're definitely a big part of being able to do this event. People that are interested can go to warmfest.org/volunteer, fill out a quick form, and people that help out get tickets and a T-shirt, and there's a lot of things that they can help with. So,
sort of the standard thank you from not-for-profits and enterprises like that, the T-shirt and a chance to attend the event. And then another question from a caller says, is WarmFest including local bands in the festival? I know you answered that one already, but to reemphasize, and could you name some of the local bands?
For sure. We have a ton of great local bands. In fact, on Saturday, we're featuring Joyful Noise Recordings on the main stage. Mm-hmm. They're a local label with a lot of national bands. So we've got some of their national and local bands. Local bands including Co. and Busman's Holiday and Sleeping Bag. And then some national bands like Of Montreal, Y, Sebado, Half Japanese. But then in addition to that, we have the Reverend Peyton's Big Damn Band, who has a huge following here. Mm-hmm. The East Hills, Audiodacity, Pravada, Max Allen Band. DJs like DJ Top Speed, Action Jackson, A-Squared DJs.
Zero Boys.
Zero Boys.
How do you go about choosing who's going to appear?
Oh, you really want to hear how the sausage gets
made. Well, we've got strong appetites on this show.
There's a lot of great local music here, so it's actually kind of difficult to pick to do that.
That's part of the reason I'm working with Jack and Jeb and Carl at Joyful Noise and Josh Baker and all these people that are very active in the community music wise. There's plenty of people to reach out to, and so I surrounded myself with those people, and they're the ones that have helped us direct our bookings.
We are talking about WarmFest here on No Limits. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Susan, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yes, and I wanted to really compliment the gentlemen that are in charge of WarmFest. I've not attended it before. It caught my attention just today in the Indianapolis Star, so it was timely for me to listen to your program. I was living on the White River when I moved here initially in 1972 up in Nora, and we used to eat the fish we caught. And we water skied and swam in the White River, and obviously many of us know that changed.
When did it change? I mean, normally the format I don't ask the callers the questions,
I can't be certain when that changed. But you know, it's word of mouth. When people started saying it's not safe to swim, don't eat the fish, maybe in the 80s.
Okay.
And you've talked about runoff concerns, our environmental concerns. And the other reason I called, I'm originally from Louisville, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. You notice how I said that, Louisville.
Yeah.
And your guests are probably familiar with the Forecastle Festival down there.
We've mentioned it.
Some really bright young people are behind that. And it took years for the community to embrace and recognize the value of the Ohio River being a river town. And as you may know, if you spend time down there, there are lots of amenities now. People go there to have fun, to enjoy recreation, and there's a lot of boating on the Ohio River. But the other piece, and I'll let you go, I lived next door to a gentleman named Ed Ahrens in the 80s in Butler, Tarkington. He's gone to the great beyond, and he had photos of Broad Ripple Park from the 1900s. And I was amazed, as your one of your guests talked about, that this wasn't a resort area with a huge beach and people went swimming and they had boats. And so I'm glad to know that someone is digging up this information and sharing it so that we might recapture, you know, some of the glory days. So he owned, by the way, Weiss's Delicatessen on the Circle, if anybody's old enough to remember that.
Yeah, I do remember.
But at any rate, I thank you, gentlemen, for your efforts. I hope to attend WarmFest, and I hope a lot of people will join me and everybody in the community. And, John, thank you always for your programming.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Susan, for the kind words and for listening. Thanks for calling.
Take care.
You
bye-bye.
Too. Bye-bye. Well, I want to – that's got to feel somewhat good. I mean, clearly you know what it's a lot of work, and you know now at least one person really gets it, what you're trying to do, right?
Right. Dan?
But I want to talk a little bit. Last year was the first year, right,
mm-hmm.
for Warm Fest,
yeah.
and it was a three-day event. Why did you expand it to four? What was the thinking?
Well, I kind of influenced that a little bit. I was thinking that with Monday being more of a community day and not doing, you know, last year we had, I think, Michael Fronte on Monday. It was a big event. And some people were saying, you know, it's kind of goes a little late for a school day, school night. How can we make this more inclusive of the community? And Friday night allows us to do a lot of local music. Monday night, a lot of community things. And Saturday and Sunday is really the heart of the festival with, you know, a lot of the headlining acts. And this is what you expect from a music fest. So part of it is we want people to feel like they can kind of come and go and explore. Personally, I'm having my family move into the Broad Ripple Hotel for the whole weekend. So we rented a suite there, and we're staying there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night. Mm-hmm. And I love the idea of just having a weekend in Broad Ripple.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this gets back to the idea of it being a resort area.
Mm-hmm.
And with the recent violence that's happened, this is a chance for us to say, hey, that's not what Broad Ripple's about.
Mm-hmm.
Broad Ripple is about bringing your family, going to the park, enjoying great food, walking around the canal, all these things, Monon Trail. And I think that we can sort of reclaim the neighborhood more for those community reasons and get back to those resort routes that Susan so well spoke to. I really appreciate that call.
We've gotten a question from a caller who didn't want to go on the air, who wanted Dan to elaborate on what he meant about the Carmel water supply situation.
Well, it's been in the paper that there was a neighborhood who is resisting the proposal to put in retention tanks for their combined sewer overflows. So without being an expert on that subject, I think it was the first time that I had really seen public information that Carmel did have a combined sewer overflow issue, which obviously eventually makes its way to the White River.
We are talking about Warm Fest here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. We've got with us on the phone the mayor of Carmel, Jim Brainerd, who's also been on the show before. Mayor Brainerd, welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks. I was driving, wasn't able to call. You know, you're not supposed to make cell phone calls in your car when you're driving, but back when you were discussing the White River, and I wanted to clarify what the issue is,
okay,
in Carmel for your listeners who may be confused.
Yeah, and if you could do it in about a minute, I'd appreciate it.
I can do it even faster than that.
Right.
There are two sewer districts in Carmel. The city owns one of them, and we own the treatment plant that processes for the city of Carmel, as well as the area called the Clay Regional Waste District. We have contracts with both Westfield and Clay Regional to process their sewage. The overflow issue you read about in the Indianapolis Star recently,
mm-hmm.
is not at the White River. Our plant handles that. It's won award after award from the Environmental Protection Agency and State IDEM. And the water that we put back in the river, which is very important to us, is cleaner than the water in the river at that point. The problem that we're experiencing right now is that when Clay Regional's system isn't large enough and doesn't have the proper capacity to get the sewage over to our plant, and so there's overflows within their system when it rains a lot, and that's the issue that we're dealing with. But I didn't want to leave the impression that our sewer plant was doing anything bad to the White River.
And we thank you for the clarification. Thank you for calling in. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. We hope you'll come back and visit us sometime.
Well, I'd love to, and love to come in and talk. We're doing a new festival, too, called Porch Fest, coming up on September 14th, which might be of some interest to your listeners as we talk about interesting festivals, too.
Great. We will put it in the hopper. Thank you again for calling, Mayor.
Take care, John.
You too. Bye-bye.
Hopefully it comes and checks out Warm Fest.
Well, we are talking about Warm Fest here on No Limits. My guests are promoter Dan Ripley, Jack Shepler, the CEO of AOK and promoter of festivals including Warm Fest, Broad Ripple Music Festival, and Circle City in Pride, and Jeb Banner, Small Box CEO and founder of Musical Family Tree. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about Warm Fest, the three-day or four-day festival in Broad Ripple Park that celebrates the White River and the art, recreation, and music associated with it. My guests are Dan Ripley, who is a promoter, Jack Shepler, the CEO of AOK and promoter of festivals including Warm Fest, Broad Ripple Music Festival, and Circle City in Pride, and Jeb Banner, CEO of Small Box and founder of Musical Family Tree. We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Wayne who asks, is the Carl G. Fisher Society a 501c3, which means can you make a tax-deductible contribution to it? And how much of last year's proceeds went to the society, and how were they used?
Well, the Carl G. Fisher Society status applied for.
Okay.
With the 501c3, which
can be a cumbersome process. I mean,
although there's a new short form
available,
so we did apply through that. And last year, unfortunately, there weren't proceeds for the Carl G. Fisher Society, but proceeds did go to land stewardship at the Indianapolis Parks Foundation.
Okay, how many people come to Warm Fest? How many people came last year, and how many are you expecting this year, Jack?
Last year we had about 10,000 people through the weekend, and I would expect probably about the same
this year the 4 days. Or were you expecting growth because you spread it out, or was the idea of going four also to make it a little less congested? Because I'm thinking having, 3,300 people together coming through there could make it a little lively.
Right. It'll probably vary by day. I imagine Saturday and Sunday may be a little busier. That's when we have our big headlining bands. But, obviously we're hoping to get close to that.
We don't experience any congestion issues. This is a 60-acre park.
Okay.
It is
we can
massive.
Fill a lot.
And there is plenty of space for more people. So if you hear that there's 5,000 people in the park, go ahead and come on out because there's room for more.
There's still room. You can pitch a tent and all of that sort of stuff. So if that's the case, you got 10,000 people. I mean, what kind of how much money do you expect to raise through this? You indicated is your goal simply to break even, or is it to generate funds and apply them to the Carl G. Fisher Society or to other worthy causes?
We do have a goal to be able to provide profit and proceeds towards not just our nonprofit organization, but others, and Parks as well. Parks is a partner in this, and they receive proceeds from this event as well. As the caller mentioned earlier astutely, that it's a multi-year process for one of these festivals to grow to a profitable level and to really have an impact. So we're just now entering our second year. From what I'm told, it's 3 to 5 years for us for a festival like this to really have the impact that I envision. As a serial entrepreneur, I'm rather impatient, so I'd like to see it happen this time. But we do hope for.
Long term, and I'll throw this one to Jeb, but I'll let everybody have a crack at it. I mean, say you've gotten to that 5-year mark or even the 10-year mark. What constitutes success? I mean, what do you hope will be the legacy of this, the lasting impact? Mm-hmm. I'll start with Jeb, but I think everyone.
I think the primary thing is community impact, creating something that the community can really rally around like they have with Forecastle. You know, I knew JK when he was just starting Forecastle back in 06, when I was just starting the Broad Ripple Music Fest, which Jack later took over. And I kind of thought he was half crazy. And I think you kind of have to be half crazy to do a music festival. It takes a lot of sweat and a lot of money and a lot of faith to get it going. Our research says it takes years to make it profitable. So when it's up and running, though, it gets a lot of momentum behind it. You get sponsorship momentum, you get ticket sales, people plan around it. And that's the challenge we have, is we got to get it to that year three, year four, to where it starts to really reach cruising altitude. And so, you know, we need the community to come behind the event because it's a great event. If you went last year, you know, it made believers of everybody that was there. The impact then becomes, hey, this brings in people from around the area. People start to come in. They start to experience Indianapolis. People here have a greater sense of pride in the space. Obviously, we reconnect further to our parks, to the neighborhood, to the river. And then I think we have a greater opportunity to sample local music, local food, local shops, everything. This is really a sampler of Indianapolis in a lot of ways. Food trucks are out there. You know, all kinds of – it's just like a big – wonderful festival. You know, music is a big piece of it, but there's so many pieces of it that give you a tasting menu of what Indianapolis culture is like.
Dan, I'll let you have a crack too at that. I mean, obviously there are, it isn't, it's clear it's not just about the money for you guys. There are easier ways to make or raise money. There's some other goal in mind here.
Well, I'm a resident of the river. I envision a day, in the day's here for me, but it's not here for everyone, where I travel the 4 miles downriver in my boat and go to Broad Ripple for dinner. Mm-hmm. I have a safe public access dock. There are people that are walking boardwalks along the river from the park into the village. I envision a boardwalk plaza that with a visitor center that overlooks our historic dam that has views of the village that and the river. Like it was mentioned earlier, you can't see the river from most of the village. If you drive along Broad Ripple Avenue next to the high school, you can see where honeysuckle has been removed but is now grown back, and it's starting to block those views again. So for me, that long-term vision is it restores the scale of Broad Ripple to what it was originally originally designed. And Broad Ripple is named after the river. Mm-hmm. So let's reconnect to it. Let's use it. Let's enjoy it and embrace it.
Jack.
You know, I moved here from college in 2006, and I didn't really plan on staying here. I kind of viewed it as a temporary hop to a bigger city. And started working at Small Box with Jeb, and I was on the street team of Forecastle Festival, and got to play at Forecastle, and worked with Josh Baker on Midwest Music Summit, and just kind of fell in love with Indianapolis, and loved being a part of all these cultural events. And I think that this event is a huge. I don't know what the word is, a huge milestone, I guess, for that cause. Erica Smith from the Indianapolis Star wrote a great article last year basically saying that events like WarmFest help attract people from college, you know, keep them from going to bigger cities. And the more culture we have here, the more attractive it is to college grads. Because, again, I don't know if I would have stayed here if I didn't come here and realize just how awesome Indianapolis can be.
We are talking about WarmFest here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Got a listener named Cameron who lives in Crow's Nest, didn't want to go on the air, but wanted to know what the effect of the combined sewer overflow system in Muncie might be on the river downstream in Indy. Dan, you seem to be the most knowledgeable about these issues, so I'm going to throw that one to you.
Well, as I stated before, I'm careful to state facts about that kind of impact.
Muncie mayor might call you up.
Yeah.
We have a broad reach on this.
Although I would have enjoyed a conversation with Mayor Brainerd, but... no, but to find that information, I suggest going to the White River Alliance, which was previously called the Upper White River Watershed Alliance. So I'm not clear on what their new website is. And actually, Mary Hayes from the White River Alliance will be here in studio with me next week, and she will have, I'm sure, more information than I do about that. Because a part of that conversation may involve the proposed reservoir that they're planning or hoping to build up there. So I really don't know much about the water treatment services from obviously Carmel or Fisher or Noblesville, which mm-hmm. are much closer. But I'm sure in some ways they impact us all the way downriver from way up there.
We've also, Wayne is reconnected with us via Twitter, and he says he appreciates the answer to his question about the Carl G. Fisher Society. He says, I would encourage more transparency about CGF Society and its composition, mission.
I respect that.
We are talking about WormFest here on No Limits. Aaron, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. First of all, I wanted to thank everyone involved with WormFest for putting it on. I believe that the White River is the most valuable natural asset our city has. And I live on the river in Rocky Ripple and have for a long time, and water ski up in Broad Ripple all the time. And my whole life, I'm just continually shocked that more people, even after they're surprised and how beautiful it is, don't actually partake and use it more. And I wondered if there's something that has to do with a majority of people in Indianapolis having a disconnect from nature as a part of daily life in general. And one other question was if the WormFest was addressing in any way the Asian milfoil problem in the river during its community activities.
Thanks very much for the call and the questions. We'll try to answer both of them, Aaron.
Thank you.
Thanks. Well, Jack, I'll go with you first.
That first question, I think a lot of it just has to do with access. As far as I know, there's really only one public dock on the White River, and that's in mm-hmm. Broad Ripple. And not everyone owns a boat. There's the one boat that you can rent, but I just think it's a lot of it has to do with access.
Well, I know. I had a friend long ago who lived here, was from Indianapolis, and had a theory that some of it, too, is also that Indianapolis, many other cities grow up because of sort of natural circumstances, and this city became what it is because we decided we wanted to put the capital in the geographic center of the state and make it easily accessible, that it wasn't quite as organic. I don't know whether, I'm not sure that's a question that we ever can answer, but I thought I'd throw that out. The second part of the question about the milfoil, Dan.
Well, again, there's organizations that are more focused on those type of invasive species. We've been able to accomplish removal of the invasive honeysuckle along the nearly a half mile of the riverfront. The milfoil, frankly, I've heard a theory from a colleague of mine on the river that feels that it is the nutrients from the runoff up above, whether it's coming from cities or farming, that feeds that milfoil and causes its expansive growth. Although this year we've experienced much less of it than last year, and I attribute that to the incredible winter that we had and the massive ice flows that came down through there. But all of those kind of initiatives are things that the Carl G. Fisher Society has a vision to help promote.
I'm going to ask you guys to step away from being promoters and organizers for this event and look at it kind of as just someone who plans to attend it. I mean, Jeb, I know, has mentioned he's even moving out of his house for the weekend and into a hotel suite with his family, and just say, what's the one thing associated with the festival that you're most excited about or that you're most looking forward to? I'll start with Jeb.
I really enjoyed the people side of it. It was a great cross-section of people from Indianapolis. It had this very friendly community vibe. It felt very safe. I really felt like I could let my kids run a little wild, I got my kids are a little older now, but let them really explore the festival, give them $20 to go shopping, in the Indy Vintage Marketplace. I love the variety of it. Music was a big part, but I was a little bit surprised last year that it wasn't the biggest part for us. It was the food trucks. It was the vintage marketplace. It was all I think we have someone doing balloon animals from walking around. Just all the little diversity of the weekend, the riverboat cruise. And then sometimes just sitting on the lawn and enjoying kind of the flow of people walking around. So for me, it was just the sense of place and being part of a community and feeling very safe and welcome in that place. Like I said, it felt like home. And I've been to music festivals where sometimes you feel like you're about to get trampled or whatever, but it's a big, like Dan said, 60 acres. You can really spread out. You can find your turf. I really enjoyed that part of it last year. And the music was great, too. This year, the music, even in my opinion, is a step above, but maybe more to my flavor, perhaps, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of indie rock. I love the fact we got a local record label that's doing a showcase. I mean, there's a great story. You could do a whole show about Indiana record labels. Mm-hmm. There's some of the biggest independent record labels in the country here in central Indiana.
Mm-hmm. Jack.
I would definitely echo the community vibe, but also for me, music for sure. I'm really excited to see Of Montreal. I've been following them for years and kind of a big fan. But then also the riverboat cruises. I've been on events on those cruises, and it is a lot of fun, and it's really awesome to actually get to go out and see the White River.
And Dan, we're going to give you the last word on this one. It seems appropriate.
Well, it's really hard for me to separate myself from the whole scope of the festival, but and obviously the idea of it feeling like home and becoming a staycation, if you will, the idea that I can experience this event in my backyard and jump in my boat and go experience it. But I'll share it. One of the biggest thrills of last year was my wife and I are longtime fans of Big Ed Todd and the Monsters, and we invited the lead singer and guitar player Todd Park Moore to play an acoustic set on the riverboat. And they're from that band is from Colorado, mm-hmm. and we've gone for years to see their shows in Colorado, and Colorado is an amazing place. Mm-hmm. So I was a little self-conscious about taking Todd Park Moore out on White River. But at the end of the cruise, he came to me and said, "This is truly one of the most enjoyable experiences I've had as a performer. And I loved your river, and I loved the people." He ended up staying through the overnight. His band left. He spent the next day at the festival, all day Monday, went on stage with a lot of the other bands. And he gave us a little private concert in our home later that night, too. So,
wow. That's a great story. Well, real quickly, if we could give people the URL one more time. So if they do want to attend, Jack, I'll throw that one to you.
It's warmfest.org.
And if you have not yet learned enough about WarmFest, I'd like to remind you that 90.1 will have a special WarmFest music preview special on August 27th at 7 p.m. I'd like to thank my guests, Dan Ripley, Jack Shepler, and Jeb Banner, for a wonderful hour. I've enjoyed talking with all of you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.
I'd like to thank our listeners. Also invite you to come back and join us on Thursday when we're going to be talking to former Senator, former Governor Evan Bayh. I am John Krall. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Cedric Freeman. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.